My name is Izetta Steele. I am talking with Rhoda Outland Morris in Callaway County, Kentucky. Today is April the 9th, 1983. Are you agreeable to being interviewed on tape?
Yes, I am.
Just to make sure my record is correct, would you please spell your full name?
R-H-O-D-A.
Rhoda, okay.
O-U-T-L-A-N-D-M-O-R-R-I-S, Morris.
And what is your spouse's name?
Garnet Leon Morris.
And would you spell his name, please?
G-A-R-N-E-T-T-L-E-O-N, Leon, M-O-R-R-I-S, Morris.
And what is your occupation?
Almost housewife.
And your spouse's occupation?
Well, we're both retired, but he was an interior decorator and painter.
And how long have you lived at this present address?
Since 1945.
And this present address is on South 16th Street in Murray, Kentucky. And where did you live before you moved to Murray, Kentucky?
We lived on a farm out near Singing Spring Baptist Church in a little town called Wishwell. This little town at the beginning was known as Daisy, but in a few years later the name was changed to Wishwell.
And how long did you live out there?
15 years. There was a store there, a country store, which furnished about, you buy just about anything that you wanted or needed. And a little mill and where you could have your corn ground, and it was a very good community.
And it was mainly a farming community.
That's right.
And where did your parents come from?
They were born and lived their lives in Callaway County. My parents were reared on the east side of Callaway County near Elm Grove Community.
And what were their occupations?
My mother was a housewife. My father was a farmer part of the time, and then he served as county officers, just jailer and some other offices.
Now, what were their names, your mother and your father's name?
My father's name was Bun A. Outland. My mother's name was Alice Elizabeth Outland.
And what is your religious preference?
Baptist.
How old are you?
I was born in 95. I'm 87. I'll be 88 in December.
And tell me a little bit about your schooling. Where did you go to school as a little girl?
In the rural schools of Callaway County.
Do you remember the names of some of them?
Bethel.
Is that where you were in first grade?
I was in first grade, and I went to Bethel, and Elm Grove was the two rural schools that I attended.
Were these one-room schools?
One-room schools, one teacher.
And who, do you remember your first teacher?
Mr. Son Evans. He was a good teacher, if I remember correctly, and Mr. Walter Crisp, and she would, Ms. Crisp would substitute, and at intervals.
And then when you finished those schools, the other education did you get?
Well, I went to Murray High. I had 2-year grade school in Murray High, and then I went to Murray High, and when I was about 17, and I always wanted to be a school teacher. And so to do that, there's only one high school in Callaway County, and that was Murray, the county seat. So they had required to take a teacher's course and then take a teacher's examination. And I took what they called a teacher's course. All the common school branches was included in that, and those questions that they were, then if you took a diploma examination, they called it, that would entitle you to your, and take 3 extra high school subjects, that would entitle you to your tuition. And that meant much to us then, more than people now can realize, because there was money was scarce and it was hard to make, come by. So I went to, I took this teacher's course, and they sent out these questions for the diploma examination, and I passed that. And then my tuition was paid, which meant very much at that time.
Now, did you board in Murray while you were
Yes, I did. We lived out in the country. Roads were muddy. It was been impossible, almost, to have gone from home. And I stayed at Mr. Dellen Purdom's home. And they were a lot of help to me. And he was a rural teacher to himself.
And then when you completed this work at Murray High School, did you start teaching school after that?
Well, after I passed this diploma examination, and then we had to take a teacher's examination after that. That came from Frankfurt, and I was given a school before we got reports from these grades, and that required a first class certificate. But when I got my grades back, why, I had made my certificate, and then I started teaching. I taught at Dexter, a two-room school, a little town.
And you were how old at this time?
I was nearly 19. I was 18.
But you started teaching school at 18?
At 18, yes, I started teaching.
And then how long did you teach school?
I taught 10 consecutive years. And then I substituted, and for many years, our children came along, our two little girls, and I didn't want them full time. And I substituted in the county for many years.
When was your last teaching assignment? You've taught many, many, many years. How near to this present day?
1949, I think, would have been the last year.
That you taught for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
And that was filling out a term for a...
For another teacher.
Who quit.
She had quit and had resigned, and for some reason she had to leave, and they asked me to take her place, and I finished that school.
So school teaching has been your goal and your ambition all your life, is to work with young people.
That is well said. That's true.
And you've enjoyed teaching school?
I really did.
Very, very much.
And I taught the same age groups in
and
Sunday
then,
school.
Then you went into church and taught and worked with young people in the churches that you belong to, carrying on that teaching of love of teaching.
For over 40 years.
Right. So the whole structure of your going to school and trying to get your education, and the struggle for getting work beyond a high school level at that time, is it's very difficult to obtain, and people presently cannot believe the work it took to get that accomplished.
As I said, we only had the one high school. And you couldn't get there in the winter from home. And then to get past that, we had extension schools that would be sent out get some college work. I got some of that, then went to Bowling Green. And
that's before Murray was a college.
There was no college in Murray. There was only one high school. And there wasn't any gravel on the roads even. It was muddy. They're dusty in the summer, muddy in the winter.
So the present day generation cannot imagine the effort that it took.
Have no conception of what it meant to go to school
to
in
even
those
get
days.
A high school diploma, much less a college diploma.
It was about as hard to obtain as a diploma in college would be now.
And probably harder just from the environment around you, with lack of transportation and things like that. Well, I wanted to set up this background as a teacher, and your goals toward teaching school and working with young people in a teaching capacity. Now that we have that little bit of background, I'd like for us now to turn our minds toward quilting. We have many experiences that we share with each other on these tapes and this Quilters on File program that lets each quilter or each person who has had quilting in their background to give some of their thoughts and their impressions and their pleasure that they have gained from quilting through the years. So let us turn our mind to some of this type of information. Do you remember when you learned to quilt?
No, I do not. I don't remember.
Do you find a memory of your mother quilting, or how did you just get introduced to quilting?
Well, my mother was a good seamstress at anything she did. She quilted and piece quilts, so just led into all that.
It was just an environmental exposure,
right,
that you had that just came through for all your
right.
life. Do you remember any particular quilt that in your memory that you really knew that you did quilt on, like earlier or later, whether you'd be a teenager or in the 20s or younger than that?
I don't remember. I'll be honest, I don't remember even learning to quilt.
It was just
automatic.
It just
went into it.
Well, that's really really interesting. But your mother did sew a lot. She made a lot of quilts.
My mother was an excellent seamstress.
And as well as clothes.
I didn't know there was such a thing as buying a pattern. My mother could sew. Just show her what you wanted.
And then you mentioned that she would spin the yarn from the wool to make socks and gloves.
She knit our stockings and our gloves. And she'd spin this
wool,
wool for thread.
So
then dye it, and it was real pretty. We had a spinning wheel.
Was the source of the clothes. You didn't go to the store and buy them.
Oh, no.
Do you remember any patterns that were in the quilt that your mother made? Now we mentioned that some of the quilts were for utility purposes and some were for beautiful, special Sunday kind of quilts.
The wedding ring was a pretty pattern that she made to pretty, and I have one today that she made. And a bird's, she has a bird on every block. And she made a beautiful quilt.
That was an embroidered quilt.
Embroidered quilt. And it was pretty.
So in the quilt that you have had in your background, there are so many different types of things that she has done. Let's talk about the kinds of things that you have experienced yourself in your family. Then, do you remember, were you married and started your own home when you really entered into the quilting
things? When I really, because of necessity, we needed the quilts for cover. We didn't have a heat over the house as you do today. And it required making quilts to sleep warm.
The kinds of fabrics that you put in your quilts?
Scraps. I mean, just pieces of material that was left from sewing, that was made into quilts.
Did you find that you had special patterns when you started making your own quilts?
Well, you cut, maybe you'd make a 4-patch or a 9-patch or something else, or star, whatever you made. And then what was left that was too small to cut into a pattern, then you would take those, we call it string quilt, and we'd cut blocks of paper and get those strings across there. We'd quilt it, piece it. And then after they were all sewed on and you cover that, then you turn over and cut around and make it a perfect square. Then you might buy a little material to make little strips to sew that together. We call it setting our quilt together. And it looked very pretty after it was finished because there was various colors in it.
Now let's talk about that string quilt just a little bit to define how that would be different to just a 4-patch or a 9-patch. You made a pattern like you wanted it to look.
Of paper.
Of paper. Now that paper
was the
would
size.
Be like newspaper?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or yes. catalog paper, yes. or some kind of paper you had around the house.
And there's those squares would all be the same size.
And you would sew the fabric to the paper.
That's right.
And that would be irregular. You just take pieces that would look pretty together.
That would reach across and would fit on there.
All right. Then you would turn it over where your paper pattern would show.
And cut around the square, leaving the paper on there.
And then when did you take the paper off?
Well, when we got ready to set it together, we called it. When you put those strips, we usually would buy some strips. Sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we just sewed those together. But we'd usually have a strip and some solid color, red or green.
To have enough light to go through.
To go through setting. Which would give pretty color on it. And then we'd tear those papers off and just have the material to sew on to our...
Then you'd have a perfect fit. It wouldn't get out of size or stretch a little bit.
It was a pretty quilt. You might not think so, but it was.
Oh, I think they were really pretty. I think they were very...
It had so many various colors in it. It was pretty.
Well, in fixing a quilt, how did you set a quilt together and how did you... quilt. Did you quilt with a frame or with a hoop?
With a frame.
Would you describe how you put a quilt in, how you set it in?
Well, our frames, they're called my quilting frames, and there were four, made the perfect size you wanted your quilt was. And then there was holes on those frames. Then there was, we put a hook in the ceiling. They had to be put up to the ceiling to swing down. And then tied a little rope or a big string or large enough to hold it. Or it's usually a little rope. And then you tie this down here to your quilting frame. And then the quilting frame had a strip of bed ticking or some heavy material, new, that was clean and nice, tacked on two of those frames. So we'd sew that lining, whip it on to that little piece of material, and then put it on. But had large nails, and we call them quilting frame, quilting nails. We save those nails from year to year to put in the corners of these holes, in these quilt frames, those little holes, all the way down. And then when we'd quilt, then you'd take the nails out to roll it, and two would get a hold of it to hold it straight, and then you'd roll that quilt, and then put the nails back where those holes would fit together at each end. And then you'd quilt again.
And then you would would you quilt from the center out to the edge, or would you start at the edge?
Start at the edge. Uh-huh. And we'd use a piece of crayon to lay off our pattern.
Okay, now tell me about that. How
just school crayon, you know, just like that. Well, you hold one end of your, have your crayon tied onto a piece of string that length that you wanted your pattern to go. We called it fans
or shells.
A lot of people did. Mm-hmm. Or a fan is a way. Or sometimes you'd quilt squares, or you know, to make it straight lines.
And then if you had this string on a piece of chalk, then how did you lay out your quilt?
Well, it holds your string with one hand so that all be the same size. Then reach out with your string the width you want it to go out. And just mark around and come down to the other
edge.
And
then as you wanted the shell to be bigger, you'd lengthen your string.
Lengthen the string.
Or the fan.
And then for the next fan or shell, you'd go out, you'd start a new over here, and then come around to your shell that you'd meet it then.
And you would draw that off just as you'd turn the quilt. You wouldn't do it all ahead of time.
No, just you might one side at a time, never more than that.
And then when your quilt was all finished, that would brush off and there'd be no marking.
No marking whatever. None whatever. And most people just use that way because we quilted because we needed the cover. Houses wasn't warm like they are now. Probably not underpinned and not heat all over them like you have now. And it was necessary to quilt two or three quilts.
What kind of first layer did you have, the backing? What type material?
Well, sometimes we'd use cotton flannel. Sometimes I'd get good cotton. But the flannel was good and warm. And then we used that a lot.
And then what was your batting? What type
we could buy the batting just in rolls, and just unroll it across as you went until you got over the quilt, and then put your top on. Put in your lining first, and then that batting, and then your top, and then sew it on all around. Get it smooth.
Now this is all in the frame, hanging from the ceiling.
That's right.
At a level that's easy to work.
Where you could sit in, stand and do that, and then where you could put it down lower, kept it, roll it up on the ends of these quilting frames till it was the right height when you sat down in your chair.
Well, how did you keep it from having a wrinkle in there if you worked from the outer edge inward?
Well, you had put it in and sewed it around, you know, with long stitches. Had all that fastened down completely.
So you took care of that
to begin with when you put it in.
But then tell me about the quilting of the quilts. Did you ever have a social event out of it, or was it alone? Did you work alone or with other people?
Sometimes you could quilt alone, but most of the time it was very entertaining. Your neighbors would come in the afternoon, you'd get your quilt ready, and you just get along fine. It was just everybody enjoyed it and had a good time. And I remember one time my neighbors came in and we quilted one afternoon, and then each one put their initial on it. And so they would remember that how many were present at that particular time.
Now, did you make it like a dinner, or did you have lunch?
We usually had it in the afternoon. In the mornings, most people were very busy with other things we had to do.
Well, did you ever go to what they call a quilting bee, or where they would have an all-day event out of it?
Yes, I went to one of those. A lady had one quilt upstairs and one downstairs, and we carried a dish, and we stayed all day, and we quilted those two quilts out.
In one day?
In one day, if I remember correctly, we did. But there was a big crowd then. She'd invited quite a few people in to get both those quilts quilted. That was helping her, too.
These were her own personal quilts?
Yes, just common, everyday covered quilts.
Well, did you ever make a friendship quilt, or where people made blocks and combined into a quilt for someone?
I can't say for sure. Seems like once it was, but I won't say.
Well, sometimes churches or groups make up a friendship quilt, and everybody makes a different block and fix them together.
Yes, that's right. And I don't remember distinctly. I couldn't answer.
Well, some of these things, you know, may have happened, but it's just hard to recall the exact doing of all of it.
It really is.
Did you remember how long a time that it takes you usually to quilt out a quilt if you were in your own home with just the usual quilters of friends coming in?
Well, not more than 2 days.
Really?
If they could all get in there and work, everybody knew what to do and were all good help. But sometimes it'd be more than that, but depending on how many hours you put in, of course, like it is in anything else.
Did they all do pretty good in making nice stitches, or were some better quilters than others?
Well, of course, some were better than others, but they were all average, because they quilted for themselves, too. They were all experienced quilters.
Well, then did you ever go then to their house to quilt at their house?
Oh, yes. You help each other. You know, neighbors did that then.
Well, did you quilt like at night, or was it easier to quilt in the daytime?
In the daytime. It was
the light would be better.
Light was better. Mm-hmm. And then
people were freer in the daytime.
Freer in the mm-hmm. daytime. The ladies were, because the children usually were at school if they had children, and if you were much freer and could do it with more ease in the daytime.
In your opinion, what makes a good quilt? What do you find that's pleasing about a quilt when you look at it? How do you decide?
Well, you want them to be pretty and attractive, and then fixed to where they'll be comfortable and warm and durable.
And do you enjoy quilting?
Oh,
do
yes.
you find it to be pleasurable?
Very much. I like to quilt. I really do. I enjoyed the quilting more than I do piecing them, but I like both of them.
The the kinds of quilt designs, did the shell or the fan seem to be the one that you used most?
Most,
Did you do any fancy quilting, you know, like the scrolls and the...
No, we'd call it sometimes by the piece, we'd call
well,
it.
Well, yes.
But as a rule, they were cover quilts. The fancy quilts wasn't used as much then. You usually had a bedspread or something that you used on top.
Because some of some period quilts went out of style of being not, a top.
Not, that wasn't for the top. Most of it was for cover, for comfort.
And then you added a bot item to go on top of that many times.
Yes, something like that.
And then after quilts went out of, sort of out of favor for a while, then they've come back
they've
in.
They've come back in.
To be
There's a lot of interest in them now. Make beautiful quilts. Very pretty.
Well, have you ever heard the term Kentucky quilts? Yeah, is there any particular quilt that comes to mind that you feel especially a Kentucky item, or is it just the local interpretation of what might be what we think of as common for Kentucky quilt? Do you know if there's ever any quilt that you see that would be totally, you say, well, now that, you can tell that's a Kentucky-made quilt. Well, there is a pattern, I think it's like on River Way, that was used more than, do you have a pattern in mind that you might think that it, maybe in your community certain things were done that might give you feelings that that might be the most popular? They were just all good. Common quilts, because we couldn't buy all this material that people didn't have. And we used the leftovers from sewing, and then when they got all the pieces cut, you could have from your pattern, whatever you were using. Then, as I said a while ago, you take those strings and the string quilts, and so you didn't have a lot of choice but to be frugal with what you had and use wise and use it.
And make something pretty.
And you didn't have much to buy.
Money wasn't really plentiful then like
people have it now.
So these are some of the Depression years we're talking about.
Depression years. In the 1930s, and I don't know from that. For several years, it went on. Well, did you ever teach anyone else to quilt? Well, no, I really never did. I had a little girl that stayed with me one fall. Her mother was teaching as an after years. And when I had a quilting, we called us having quiltings, you know. And then years later, when she lives in Florida in her own home, I had a letter from her, and she said, I never went to the one quilting bee in my life. And that was here, and she said, I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's the only one I ever saw. But I didn't even know that you registered with it.
But
it
became an item of looking back.
Very special significance to her. Well, that's great. This is about 5 years old. So you started quilting with a little girl, and now it's registered with her as a middle-aged lady. Looking back with fondness.
Did you ever look at quilt books or magazines or ideas?
Oh, I like to look at them. I think they're beautiful.
Well, do they inspire you to try, or have you sort of retired from making quilts?
I've kind of retired, and not because I'd like to, but of the first year I listened so long to do what I was wanting to do with them. But they, I enjoyed it. But the pleasure of looking at other people's people was not all the better than you ever said it. And they make them so pretty, Nella. The script calendar is just an inspiration. Now, there's a lot of it about the film calendar. Tell me about the quilt calendar. Well, my daughter was interested in it, and I said, and she likes to make quilts and makes pretty quilts, and so she has one of the quilts in this quilt calendar.
That's the point.
Yes, she does, and it's on the. And on the birthday, is it her birth? Her quilt is on the month of June, her father's birthday.
Which was very pleasant, wasn't it?
Yes.
And in case this interview has not, if we have not registered, I am talking to my mother, and I find that sharing my quilt pleasures out of the calendar and the many things this year that I have enjoyed, but it's pleasant to get to share these with my family and to enjoy telling about these things with other people.
And my friends are just thrilled with this quilt, and they carry it and show it to other people, and it's passed around for someone else's calendar on. The people that don't have one will pass it around and show it to other friends, and so it's a very, it's really scattered around here in this community.
So it has created a lot of interest in quilting.
It certainly has. And get questions like, where could I find one? Where could I want to buy one? And so forth.
So we hope we've given them that information.
They have really, I think you've given them a lot of inspiration to make quilts through this calendar of a lot of people.
Well, I hope that is true, because it's been a lot of pleasure to me to get to share my quilt with other people. Well, have you ever entered a quilt in a quilt show?
No, I haven't, no.
An affair?
No.
Never entered one?
No, Isetta has, but I haven't.
But do you think people's attitude is changing regarding quilting?
Very much. As we said, that they kind of went out of style seemingly for a while to make pretty quilts, but it's been revived now, and there's a lot of interest in it. We make pretty ones now.
And so quilting is becoming more than just a cover item. It's
much
a decorative.
And then the houses are so warm now, it doesn't require all that cover quilts that
Would you feel that there is a value to quilting? Is there any reason why people enjoy quilting?
For more reasons than one.
Well, name some of them.
Well, it's a good occupation. It's a joy, and people enjoy it, and your friends enjoy looking at them, and gives them inspiration to want to make pretty quilts. And they're so pretty on the used now in place of bedspreads or counterpins, you know, things that we've used in years past. You see these pretty quilts put on the top of the bed.
And even hanging on the walls.
Hanging on the walls and in used for decoration. Yeah, you decorate your home with pretty quilts now.
Would you find that if people were finding they didn't have anything to do, would you think that to recommend they try to make a quilt would be
It would be wonderful. Yes, indeed. Yeah, and it would be worthwhile. It would be a project that would not only be helpful, it would be entertaining, and your friends would enjoy it, looking at it.
And then the applique a quilt. Did you ever applique a quilt?
My mother would. She was very efficient, and
now, do you remember any quilts she might have appliqued? Mama Outland?
I can't remember any special one, but more than she did anything.
That she did make some little girls,
yes.
Sunbonnet girls and
yes,
things like
yes,
that.
Yes, she did. She did anything that came along. Part of my girls, I have two. One of them enjoyed the same type thing, and the other one rather read.
Right.
Study. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're different and both fine.
Did you ever cross-stitch a quilt? Our embroidery?
She did.
Now you mentioned the bird quilt a while ago.
She embroidered this bird quilt and I have it now.
And that's every State of the Union?
Yes.
State bird? Is
these state birds and she got these and made a block of each one and then quilted it with the nicest little stitch.
Very, very beautiful.
Very beautiful.
Would you?
A white lining.
Would you be able to estimate the age of that quilt now? She made that a long time ago, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd have to even figure some. It's been, 40 years.
I know I was a little girl.
It's been 48 years ago, I'd say, something like that at least.
Because she was embroidering for quite a while on all the birds
she
and then set it
embroidered
together. Anything. So she really used more different methods or different types of quilting and design and patterns than you did.
Oh, yes.
And she went into the fancier work and you took the utilitarian use
the other road.
Right. But the exposure to seeing her do all these pretty things
made you want to have them.
Right. And I think that my love for doing all these things, I'm sure my grandmother was a great influence.
That's right. To all of us.
Yeah.
And she liked to sew.
Well then, in the quilt that you mentioned you had neighbors that put their initial on a quilt once, did you ever sign your name or date a quilt?
We didn't date them. I wish we had. I never thought of that. It would ever be important then, just the who they were. It was, we just thought we'd do that, but didn't cross our minds, just didn't, and I wish we had. It'd have been a good record now.
Well, we've learned a lot by mistakes, you know, and this is one thing we've learned by, that it's a mistake not to date them.
You learn to change it if you can.
Right. Well, did you ever create a totally new design, to just make up a new design of a quilt? Of course, when you make your strain quilts, you sort of redesign that.
You redesign that as you go. You certainly
right.
do. I can't think of any special pattern right now. It's been some time since I've...
Well, how long has it been since you quilted last?
I guess it's been 10 years or something.
Because you've had a little problem with arthritis and a few things like that with your hands that keep
that
you from...
That I can't do it.
Can't do it at this
can't
time.
Can't do it. You have to kind of leave off some of the things that you would like to do, but it's been fine.
So the whole thing about working with quilts and with enjoying them and sharing them with other people, it is a creative experience, and your neighbors and friends, you have common... conversation piece with what are you doing and what projects you've made.
I have a neighbor that brought a quilt over here that she had made for her granddaughter's baby bed. It was beautiful. And she was very proud of herself for making it. But she's younger. And I think these pretty quilts are very interesting. And think of the time and the work that goes into them and the study that you put on them to get these new patterns and different patterns. It's a wonderful project. Useful.
Well, do you have anything you'd like to add? I think I have gone through my basic questions that I would be asking. Anything that you would like to summarize your whole interpretation of the project or of quilt projects? I think we've just about done that.
I think we have.
Do you think of anything we forgot to say?
Well, just what condition we would be in if people hadn't quilted.
Right. I know one we forgot to talk about was how that if you had a quilt that was wearing out, how you might restore.
Oh, just if it began to wear, get a new lining and sew in these quilting frames. And like we described a while ago, I put in this new lining, then put this quilt on in place of putting batting. you lay that old quilt in there, you know, then put your top on that you'd pieced, and it cost you very little, and made a real good cover, heavy quilt. When sometimes, and we had cold winters, and the fire wasn't even all night in all the rooms, you know, you just needed this cover.
And so just to make a new backing or whatever was wearing out.
And a new
and
top.
And just make it a little bit thicker.
And made it a little thicker. You had a good heavy quilt. You had to put an outing lining on that, and I did that a lot.
Well, now, the kind of quilt needles?
Just get your paper of needles, and because nobody really wanted the same kind, and they'd pick out the needle they wanted, you know. And
so there'd be a little variation in who would like a...
But that wasn't as important then. It was just made the average stitch, you know. It's not too bad. You didn't want the stitches to look bad. But everybody, you know, had their own little way of...
Favorite size.
Uh-huh.
And then the kind of thread you used?
Just the cotton thread.
So you didn't really worry about having the wax quilting thread?
On some of these quilts that was especially pretty, the dark colors you quilted with the black thread, and the light colors you quilted with white thread. So that didn't show underside, of course. I mean, it showed under in their lining, but not on the top of your quilt.
That was your fancy quilt.
It wasn't visible at all. And it was very, very pretty. We have one that was quilted that way in the family, and it was beautiful.
Well, the whole idea of sharing together our pleasure with quilting, we want to thank you for letting us talk about your experiences in quilting. And if you think of something we forgot, we'll talk again sometime.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.